Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Our quote for the day from Malcolm X. He says, "The media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty, the power to make the guilty innocent, and that's power because they control the minds of the masses." Part of the media, Joseph Farah. He's the editor, founder, CEO of WorldNet Daily, worldnetdaily.com, one of the premier conservative websites, in fact, so much so that they're even doing their own cruise. You can go over to worldnetdaily.com and sign up if you want to hang out with a bunch of conservatives for a week. And he has a new book out called Stop the Presses, the inside story of the new media revolution. Joseph Farah, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Tom. It sounds like we agree on everything, peace, freedom, all that good stuff. One correction to the intro. We're not a conservative site. I'm not a conservative, and I've written, and this is my second book now where I've had to try to set the record straight about that and explain why I'm not a conservative, never have been, and never will be.
Well, why is it that I'm looking at your website and I'm seeing ads for conservative T-shirts?
Because we allow people to advertise anything they want on our website, and if you, Tom, would like to advertise Air America, we'd be more than happy to give you a terrific rate.
If you don't characterize, well, maybe this is interesting. Maybe this is a matter of definitions. I mean, in your book, for example, you're calling Al Gore essentially a traitor. You know, how WorldNet Daily defeated Al Gore is one of the chapters, chapter 10.
I won't call him essentially a traitor. I'll call him a traitor without any modifiers whatsoever. But I don't know how to make me a conservative,
an enemy of the American people. Well, let's talk about that for a minute then. If you're not a conservative and your website is not conservative, what are you and it?
Well, thanks. Well, our website is a pure journalistic enterprise. I've been involved in newspaper journalism for 25 years before I started WorldNet Daily. Never belonged to any organizations, political parties, or whatnot. I've been an independent person all my life. I call them the way I see them and try to do good journalism, nonpartisan stuff. And that's how we found it.
But the way you see them is, for example, that being gay is a bad thing because the top story right now on WorldNet Daily is teachers insist being gay is good. And this is presented as, oh, my God, educators promoting homosexuality no matter what children learn at home.
Well, Tom, I'm sure that you'd be outraged if they taught in school that Christianity was good. And
speaking as a Christian, Joseph, I wouldn't object to that at all.
Really? So you think that kids ought to be indoctrinated in the five fundamentals of the Christian faith and so forth?
I think that kids should understand the fundamentals of all religions.
But
yes,
that's
absolutely
not what's happening. Have you watched the video of these teachers?
But back to the question of
deal with specifics, you know, and definitions. You have to actually deal with specifics and definitions.
Right.
I would love for you.
Number one, you're suggesting that being gay is not good. So does that make you conservative or liberal? I mean, or is it libertarian?
It makes me a believer in biblical morality.
Okay, so should we call worldnetdaily.com a Christian website?
Well, I wouldn't think that would be accurate since, you know, our Jerusalem bureau chief is an Orthodox Jew. And since
should we call it a religious website?
You want to stereotype, define, you know, project your worldview on others. We don't do
no,
that.
No, I'm asking you for yours. Joseph, as you know, we all tend to, we have to have a certain amount of shorthand in our lives. Otherwise, we're just overwhelmed by data. And there has to be a way that if you're characterizing yourself and your website as just straight journalism, and then you say things like, you know, Al Gore is a traitor and being gay is a terrible thing.
That's my opinion.
So this is an opinion piece, not a journalism piece.
That's my opinion when I talk about John Kerry being a traitor, not Al Gore.
Right, but
John
journalists
Kerry.
Don't introduce opinion into
oh,
news.
They most certainly do when it's labeled. That's all we have to do as journalists. We have a front page, which is news, and we have a commentary page that's commentary. This is the way it was done in the old media for hundreds of years, Tom. We're doing the same thing. It's just on the Internet now. I ran daily newspapers. I know a little bit about journalism. And there's nothing different about WorldNet Daily than good old-fashioned American journalism, except you guys want to, you know, pigeonhole us and stereotype and label. And I don't think labeling is good journalism. Never did.
We're talking with Joseph Ferra. He's the author of Stop the Presses, the inside story of the new media revolution. His website, worldnetdaily.com. Joseph, before this, you were running the Western Journalism Center of SCAFE, Richard Mellon SCAFE-funded front group that was looking into Vince Foster's death.
You must be reading from ConWeb Watch. Let me guess.
No, actually, ScoobyDavis.blogspot.com.
Yeah, that's where he gets his information. Scooby, by the way, notable Google bomber who likes to...
Is it true
that
did you run the Western Journalism Center?
Yes, I did.
Was it funded by SCAFE?
SCAFE provided some funding, some very limited funding to the Western Journalism Center.
And you were looking into whether Vince Foster was murdered by Hillary Clinton?
He's also the publisher of a daily newspaper in Pittsburgh. And,
I'm familiar with it.
Okay.
I'm not saying this to indict you. I'm trying to, although your press release has quotes from Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter on it, not from me. I'm guessing, or not from Al Franken, let's say. So I'm guessing that there's a take here. Jackie Mason. Okay. So we both know that there's a take. Joseph, I'm curious. Let's just talk about the issues for a minute.
Last night,
we had George Tenet, the head of the CIA, come out and say explicitly that there was never a discussion that he knew of in the White House or that he was a party to, and he was certainly one of the principals, about whether or not we should attack Iraq. From the very get-go, it was just a given. What's your response to that?
If that's true, and, I don't know that it's true just because George Tenet said it, but if that's true, that was, that's despicable, terrible thing. It's almost unbelievable.
Then why is that not the headline at the top of WorldNet Daily instead of the fact that a teacher says it's okay to be gay?
Because one guy saying it, one guy who's a Clinton appointee.
One guy who's the head of the CIA.
A Clinton appointee to the CIA, a man who was terribly unqualified for the job from the get-go, who had opportunities to kill Osama bin Laden years before and didn't pull the trigger. This is a source indictment waiting to happen. Now, if others come along and support his allegation there, maybe we have a story. But last I heard,
tell me if your take on the I'm curious about your take. We're talking to Joseph Ferra. I was more interested last night in the questions that were not asked of George Tenet than the questions that were. For example, we know that in August he specifically sent a guy down to Crawford, Texas, to personally brief George Bush on the coming attack by Al Qaeda. George Bush patted the guy on the leg, and this is all the Bush administration acknowledges this. Patted the guy on the leg. Said, now you've covered your butt, and you can go back to Washington, D.C., and tell Tenet that you've done your job, and sent him away and went out and cut brush. This is when he gets the briefing, essentially, that bin Laden's going to attack us. Why didn't Chris Pelley ask that? Why didn't he ask Tenet three different times Bill Clinton tried to assassinate Osama bin Laden and
failed? Let me ask you a question.
Why
did George Tenet wait until he had a book coming out to drop that bombshell on the American public? Why didn't he drop it on us as CIA director before September 11th and spare the country 3,000 deaths?
Why didn't CBS News ask him that question?
Well, you and I agree on many things, as we've discussed so far, and one of them is that we should not allow CBS News to set our agenda for us.
Yeah, well, and although I suspect that we may end up asking somewhat different questions, but
no, I think your question is good. I think your question is excellent. If Tenet is going to make that allegation in his book now because he wants to sell a million copies, the question that he ought to address is, how come you waited so long, buddy? We've had a 9/11 commission. You had an opportunity to go elsewhere besides to the President of the United States before September 11th. What did you do with that information then? I mean, come on, It sounds a little hard to believe at this point.
A little disingenuous, I would say.
Yeah.
Joseph Ferra, Stop the Presses, the inside story of the new media revolution. He's the CEO, founder, and publisher of WorldNetDaily.com. Joseph, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for mixing it up with me, buddy.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman program.
Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call
Bertha, Congressman John Bertha, Pennsylvania. He's got all of us.
Third is impeachment.
Yeah, we'll say that. I say that again.
Third is impeachment.
Oh yes, it's this is the guy who is Nancy Pelosi's mentor in many ways.
Third is impeachment.
Yes. Can I hear that again, sir?
Third is impeachment.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes. So it's the word is out. The I word. It's been dropped. Number one. Number two. Isn't it interesting that conservatives are reluctant to call themselves conservative? The Joe Farah is reluctant to call himself conservative. I can't speak for other conservatives, and I don't. Maybe he's not a conservative. Maybe he would, if there was a label to be attributed, it would be something else, journalist or libertarian or something. But I find that, you know, what it reminds me of is 4 or 5 days before the presidential election, in which Michael Dukakis was running against George Herbert Walker Bush. The one election that Poppy Bush won, which was what? The election of 86, I think it was. 4 days, 4 or 5 days before that election, a reporter stuck a microphone in Mike Dukakis' face, the governor of Massachusetts, and said, "Sir, are you a liberal?" And Dukakis had, for a moment, that deer in headlights look on his face, and he said, "I am not a label." Because the word liberal had been so villainized by the Republican Party and by right-wing talk radio that Dukakis was afraid to use the title. Has the word conservative been so trashed by the neocons and by Bush that conservatives are afraid to use the title now? It certainly seems that way. Meanwhile, we have Hans Blix and Condi Rice. Somewhat at odds, shall we say. This is Condi Rice last night on Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer.
Let me go back to George on this. I certainly don't blame George for the slam dunk comment, having the sense that that was the reason we went to war. I think it's a complete misreading of how certainly I read the slam dunk comment.
Does she deserve an apology?
You know, I was asked about this. And I was asked, did he say slam dunk? I said, yes. I said, but we all thought that the intelligence case was strong.
Oh,
to the
yeah.
degree that there was an intelligence...
Now, I'm just going to pause you here, Condi, for a second. They actually, the context, and Tenet, oddly enough, made this very clear. The context wasn't, is the intelligence strong enough to go to war? Is it strong enough that we can say this guy represents a threat to the United States and therefore people should die as a result of it? That wasn't the question. The question that they were debating in the White House was, is the intelligence case strong enough to sell this war to the American people? This was a marketing meeting. Condi continues.
To the degree that there was an intelligence problem here, it was not just an intelligence problem with George Tenet. It was not just an intelligence problem with U.S. Intelligence. It was an intelligence problem worldwide. We all thought, including UN inspectors, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. So there's no blame here.
There's no blame here. Even the weapons inspectors. You know, Hans Blix, he was in charge of all of them. That's what you thought?
I have not ever suggested that they were sort of willfully and consciously lying
but I think that they wanted to jump to conclusions.
The they that Mr. Blix is talking about, of course, is the Bush administration. Let's hear that again in that context.
I'm not ever suggested that they were sort of willfully and consciously lying, but I think that they wanted to jump to conclusions. I said in the Security Council that if something is unaccounted for, it doesn't necessarily mean that they exist. And I think there was that tendency to jump to that conclusion. We were there for 3.5 months, after all, and we did not find any smoking gun. And now that the U.S. has been, the U.K. had been there for quite some time, and they had the opportunity to interrogate people, they had had the whole cream of the Iraqi establishment in custody, and people should not be scared any longer to answer in the interviews. With this long period, I'm inclined to think that the Iraqi statement that they destroyed all the biological and chemical weapons which they had in the summer of 1991 may well be the truth.
And so at the Security Council, Hans Blix, as you just heard, said, we don't find anything. 3.5 months we're there. There's nothing here. So Condi Rice lying, number one. Number two, after the fact, he says nothing's there. And, you know, what is this? This is fixing the intelligence. This is like the witch hunts.
You know, in the Middle Ages when people were convinced there were witches, and then they looked for them, they certainly found them. And this is a bit risky. I think we were more judicious in saying that we want to have real evidence. And I'm not going to cite what the intelligence agencies are saying unless I have the evidence for it. If I had that, well, then I would do it.
But it never existed. This question that Tenet was dealing with last night on 60 Minutes and that Condi Rice is talking about here was, is the evidence good enough to market to the American people? Not, is the evidence good enough to go to war? This is horrible. I mean, and the questions, you know, what question would you have asked George Tenet? I've got a long list of them. You know, why did you go along with selling the war when you didn't believe there was a reason for it? Why didn't you speak up about Valerie Plame at the time? Why didn't you listen to Richard Clark? 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, airamerica.com. There we'll shortly, we're working on getting a link there to our chat room. Welcome back to our program. I just have to hear this again.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment. And fourth is the purge.
Are you seriously talking about contemplating an impeachment of this president?
Bob, what I'm saying, there's four ways to influence a president.
And that's one of them.
Is impeachment. And
that's an option that is on the table.
I'm just saying that's one way to influence a president.
Yes, Jack Martha. Now, this guy is really tight with Nancy Pelosi. And I just don't believe that he would be going on CBS with Bob Schieffer, high-profile national show, and throw that word out three times in a couple of sentences if the Democratic leadership wasn't floating a trial balloon. Now, I may be wrong, you know, this might be some wacky conspiracy theory on my part, but it just seems like a trial balloon to me. And I think it's because Dennis Kucinich introduced articles of impeachment against Cheney and probably everybody's phone lines in Congress. And you can reach your member of Congress, by the way, at 202-225-3121. Everybody in Congress, 202-225-3121, is getting called by their constituents saying, we want these guys held accountable. Jerry in Bells, Tennessee. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? I was listening to your interview, and I wondered if there is a fear now of people wanting to be identified as conservatives, because here in Tennessee, many of them have now said that, you know, there are only some true conservatives, and they're dismissing themselves from certain people. I'm thinking, what's causing this shift? Is it rats deserting a sinking ship?
I think so. The bottom line is that the conservative worldview, which comes out of the notion that humans are evil and therefore the only purpose of government is to restrain people so that they don't act out their evil impulses, and therefore government should only be police and army. I mean, that's the basic libertarian and conservative worldview. It doesn't allow for the classic American worldview, which is essentially a liberal worldview that came out of the liberal thinkers of the Enlightenment, John Locke and Rousseau and Jefferson and George Washington and James Madison, that people are essentially good, and that one of the purposes of government is to help people achieve their potential and to backstop them in times of need. If you look at the preamble to our Constitution, it lists six things that our Constitution was created to do, and only one of them is provide for the common defense. The other five are all basically lifting people up. That's the idea of government that we have. Well, the conservatives got into power 26 years ago with Ronald Reagan, and for 26 years they've been largely governing this country, and what we've seen is that as they've systematically taken apart our infrastructure, destroyed our public schools, sold off chunks of our public parks, privatized portions of our public parks, done away with our regulatory agencies, our air has gotten dirtier, our food has gotten less safe, our pets are dying, our country is not safer, frankly, but right across the board, people are looking at this and going, the conservative philosophy is bankrupt. You can't govern if you don't believe in government. And, you know, Reagan promoting that meme constantly.
I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
And, you know, that's the conservative worldview. And what it has done is in large part damaged or destroyed. Well, it's responsible for the death of over 1,000 people in New Orleans. The list goes, and a couple hundred thousand people at least in Iraq. It just goes on and on and on. So, yeah, I think that the rats are deserting the ship. Not to call Joe Ferrer a rat, but I think broadly conservatives are trying to run away from this. Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. Is this a new conservative meme? I'm not a conservative. And how do we respond if that's a new meme?
You know, I think it actually may be, because a week or so ago, I was talking with the program director of a radio station that carries all right-wing programming, and he was talking about putting finding a show that wasn't a conservative show on his station. And I said, well, you're programming a conservative station. Or I made just some comment to that effect. And he says, no, we're not. We're just programming political talk. And I'm like, well, let's see. You got Limbaugh and Savage and Hannity. And I mean, this is your line of rap. It seems like they're all, oh, no, these guys aren't all conservatives. They're entertainers. And it's like, even in the industry, it's like, you know, people are running away from it. Yeah, I think it's the new meme. I think that they're afraid of it, frankly. I think, they're running away from it. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. How's it going today?
Great. What's up?
Well, I was just—I had a comment on that interview that you did to start the show off. That seems to be the whole mantra: is to not ever really answer a question, like when will the war be over? Well, you know, we really don't know. You know, we're going to see how it goes, and then you ask him a direct question, and he just comes back with a question that's just blah blah. It's interesting how they just won't ever answer any straight questions. When he did finally answer you, if that newspaper was funded by those guys, it was kind of like, well, yeah, real quiet.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. See, I don't see that as an indictment of Joe Farah. I don't even want to turn this into about him. I think it's really about the whole issue, the larger issue in America, of what kind of conversation should we be having? What should the political dialogue be about? And why isn't, and this is where Joe Farah and I were agreeing, why isn't CBS asking the tough questions of Mr. Tenet, for example? Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick.
Yes, good day to you, Tom. I was going to say, in addition to John Murtha, I believe Chuck Hagel has an article in Esquire magazine mentioning the I-word impeachment, so maybe a groundswell building here. But
yes,
what I want
and
to
Chuck
talk
Hagel
about,
is a Republican.
Yeah, it's a very conservative Republican. But regarding Mr. Tenet, I watched the 60 Minutes interview last night. I don't know if you did.
Yes, I did.
And I found it to be one of the most compelling, if not the most compelling, interview I've ever seen in that program. And I know Mr. Tenet is being somewhat self-serving. He wants to sell a book, and he could have said this earlier, and he wants to salvage his reputation. But I think overall, you know, having this book out and him appearing on the TV shows, I think that is beneficial, don't you think?
To a certain extent, Rick, the concern that I have is that the fact of the matter is that all of these meetings in the White House were marketing meetings. They were discussions about how do we market this intelligence to the American people. And that was so subtle that I'll bet you 90% of the people watching that program didn't get it. And you know, Scott did at one point ask, you know, that one specific question. Well, was there ever discussion about whether or not we should go to war? And Tenet says, you know, not that I was in the room for. You know, I wasn't there for that. But it just, and I'm not saying that Tenet shouldn't have been interviewed on 60 Minutes or anything like that. What I'm suggesting is that in fact, we're going to be talking with Larry Johnson, formerly of the CIA, in the next hour about this, is that Tenet has a lot to answer for that he didn't answer for last night, frankly, and that I think he's doing a poor job of answering for in this book. So we'll see. We'll see. Sanchez in Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Good morning, Tom. You were asking for questions of what to ask Mr. Tenet, and basically my question would be this. Is this book an effort to resurrect your image in history? History is going to look at you as a pawn, merely a pawn, in the project for the New American Century agenda, which is basically, like you were saying, a marketing meeting and setting everybody up to lead into the war. Are you merely a pawn in the PNAC, the project for the New American Century's agenda? That would be my question.
That's a great one, Sanchez. Thank you very much for that. And let's keep in mind, Bush himself had said before he ran for president, he told his biographer, Mickey Herskowitz, well, here's the testimony before Congress from Cindy Sheehan.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend, Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
End quote. And, of course, getting past everything that you want to get past and all that kind of stuff, what is that? Obviously, it's, doing away with Social Security. Actually, that was what Bush campaigned on in 1977. I mean, you know, this just so. Steve in Missouri, just a half a minute here, Steve, before we've got to take a break. It's even less than that. Steve, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back to you on the other side of the break. I'm sorry, I misread the clock. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around. Here's your opportunity to support this program. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
The the land the impeachment of Bush. For crimes and lies, you'd like to see him kicked out on his push. Friends, you've got good reason. I support you absolutely. But this impeachment season, don't forget your civic duty. Impeach Cheney first. It can still get worse. After Bush is in cuffs, it's liable to get rough. Impeach Cheney first.
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich has it right.
Cheney first. Knock him off his perch.
9.5 minutes before the hour. This is the subtle point that I think most Americans missed in the interview on 60 Minutes last night. Just get this. This is Scott Pelley interviewing George Tenet.
What did you mean by slam dunk?
Well, I guess I meant that we could do better. I mean, you know,
do better.
We can put a better case together for a public case. That's what I meant. That's what this was about.
A public case. This isn't about should we go to war. This isn't about does Saddam Hussein represent a threat to the United States. It was about a public case.
Tenet says the president wasn't happy with the presentation, so he was telling Mr. Bush that improving the presentation would be a slam dunk.
You get that? This is all about marketing. This was a marketing meeting. Speaking of marketing, by the way, front page of the New York Times today, quiet Bush aide seeks Iraq czar, creating a stir. Stephen Hadley being criticized for looking for a war czar. Maybe I should apply for the job. And over Gary Trudeau has one of his characters in the Doonesbury comic strip applying for the job. You know, a college kid who was a summer intern with the CIA. But maybe they take a talk show host. Who knows? Brenda, hang on just a second, Brenda. We were talking to Steve in Missouri when we hit that break. Hey, Steve, welcome back.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Hey, this is in regard to your guest you had on earlier, and the non-conservative but liberal hating with the Christian morals.
Yes.
You know, when Jesus was alive, the Hebrew people were conquered and living under occupation by the Roman army and forced to live under Roman law. And Jesus didn't gather together an army to throw the Roman soldiers out. Or, you know, for that matter, the Son of God could have just commanded his own and killed every one of them. So how does he reconcile the war and killing with his Christian morals?
With the Prince of Peace. It's a good question, Steve.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. And I've never found any, well, sometimes they'll fall back on, well, he went into the temple with a whip and was all upset, but that's about as close as, you know, there's not a good justification, frankly, I don't think, for that. Dewey in Newark, New Jersey. Hey, Dewey, you want to take me to task?
Yeah, I am a conservative, a proud conservative, and I was insulted when you said that it's my people who are responsible for dirty air, pets dying, and 1,000 dead in New Orleans. Now,
okay.
The Chi-Coms are responsible for the food, for the pets. The air is not any dirtier. It's cleaner than it's ever been in this country. And those people who died in New Orleans, they died because they didn't leave town.
And they didn't leave town because the Bush administration told Mayor Nagin that there were buses coming from FEMA that never showed up.
Baloney. Nagin
I recommend you go back and read the testimony of both the mayor and the governor. It's all quite explicit. But let's ask just a simple question. Do you think that the government, the purpose of the government should be to backstop people so that if people are unemployed, they get unemployment insurance, so that if they are sick, they get health and they get health care, so that if they have some kind of disaster, they can declare bankruptcy? Do you think that the government should backstop people, or do you think that the only purpose of the government should be to provide police?
Well, I think the purpose of government, first and foremost, is to keep our people safe and our borders secure. And it's doing neither of those. So I don't see how you can expect it to be a backstop.
Right. See, you are truly a conservative and one who has some integrity about your point of view. And I understand that. And in acknowledging it, I'm suggesting that the liberal worldview, which is what this country was founded on, goes beyond that and says, no, the purpose of government is not just to provide for the common defense. The purpose of government goes way beyond that. There's a whole bunch of things beyond that. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. I mean, there's six things in that list. Only one of them has to do with defending ourselves.
My business does a lot of work with the government, and I'll tell you one thing. They are the most incompetent, difficult people to work with.
Then we need to change the government. It's very simple, Dewey. If the government isn't working well, then we need to be changing that. Yeah, you know, I'll agree with you that there's a lot of areas where the government is incompetent. But the fundamental question is, what should the government be doing? What is the purpose of government?
We have health care for the poor people. We have health care for the old people.
And you don't think we should?
No, I do. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Well, then you're a liberal.
It's there. We can't take it apart. Like, only government programs.
But you think that we should. Philosophically, we should.
Let me say this. Universal health care is a very bad idea. Most people who don't have it is because they're busy spending their money on fancy cars, VCR, TV, TiVo, whatever it is. Set your priorities. If you want insurance, save and pay for it like I do.
So again, back to the fundamental point here, is that as a conservative, you're suggesting that the job of government is not to provide a foundation or a basis for all of us, or to help us out if there's a crisis, and that therefore the people in New Orleans are dead, the 1,100 or so people who died down there as a consequence of that hurricane are dead, not because of the failure of government, but because of their own failure of being poor and living in an area and not having a car and not being able to get out of town and living in an area where there might be a flood.
Right. For the Democrat government, Democrat haven, and they failed their people.
Okay, so I don't disagree with you that what should be a liberal government failed to provide the services that a liberal government should provide, but they did provide it in a conservative way, and that's why the disaster happened, in my opinion. 57 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. You're tuned into the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
So George Tenet goes on TV last night on 60 Minutes and basically says, it's all Condi's fault. No blame here. Larry Johnson's with us, former Central Intelligence Agency and U.S. State Department officer with the Department of Counterterrorism, an expert in the fields of terrorism, aviation security, crisis risk management. His website, No Quarter, or his blog, noquarter.typepad.com. Larry Johnson, welcome to the program.
Tom, good afternoon.
Great to have you back with us, Larry. You signed a letter, along with several other people who have been on this program before, Ray McGovern, Phil Giraldi, Vince Canestraro, has, I believe, been on our program. I think it's been more than a year now. Suggesting to that you wrote an open letter to George Tenet via HarperCollins publishers, via his publishers, in which you make some fairly strong charges, shall we say. Fill us in.
Well, first and foremost, we call on George Tenet to return the Medal of Freedom that he accepted from George Bush and to dedicate at least 50% of the royalties from his book sales to the soldiers and their families who have been killed or wounded in Iraq. We feel that that's only fair because now Tenet wants to come up and holler that there were a bunch of problems and that this thing was not seriously considered and that there was no intelligence linking Saddam to bin Laden and that the Niger claim that Iraq was trying to buy uranium. That also wasn't true. He does it now. And he kept silent when he was on the job. And that was just an example of his failed leadership. But in this case, his failure of leadership has actually gotten people killed and severely wounded.
As I was watching this last night, and in fact afterwards, Louise, my wife, and I had a long discussion about, you know, speculation about why now, why not then? Is Tenet is he a suck-up, kick-down kind of guy who just got caught up into the whole thing? Number one, is that, you know, that seems like that might be possible. Or do you think that he's, because even now he will not condemn George W. Bush, is he afraid of the Bush dynasty?
No, I think he's terrified of the Bush dynasty. I got a letter, you know, as we were soliciting other intelligence officers to sign. I got a letter from a buddy of mine who declined to sign. But let me quote from his letter. He said, "I will tell you one thing, though. If your agenda is for this letter to have any impact on Tenet personally, I'm sorry to say that he is beyond that type of appeal. George is a political animal, and his recent comments are merely to sell his book and position himself for the future in his home political party, whatever that may be. Honor and conscience don't even enter into this equation." Now, this is an officer that had personal dealings with Tenet, and it was difficult. Tenet's going after, you know, he'll criticize Cheney, he'll criticize Rice, because they're not going to be important players in the future, but he doesn't want to get on the wrong side of the Bush family. And, you know, he treats George Bush as the equivalent of a bobblehead doll, you know, just an accessory on the desk that wasn't a decision maker or played any role in what was going on.
Or as an emperor of whom no ill shall be spoken. I mean, this is the thing. You have the Bush dynasty here has been around for a long, long time, going back to Prescott. An enormous concentration of power and wealth in this country. And frankly, I in fact, I think that they've even absorbed some of the Clinton, Bill's association with Bush Sr. is like, hey, let's become part of the dynasty here. But it seems that Jeb is the next one in line, and I'm fully expecting 4 or 8 years down the road to see Jeb running for president. And this is a dynasty that's not going to go away, that has its tentacles all over the place, and in all of them, you know, a huge multinational, a multi-billion dollar, arguably even a trillion-dollar enterprise, you know, from Carlyle
right.
Group on down. And you go up against these people, and you're dead. I mean, you could literally be physically dead. You certainly will be politically dead.
Yeah, he didn't want to take the political or economic risk with him. That is quite clear. And yet, it is just, you know, I think it's reprehensible of him to come up and say these things now when he knew them then.
Yeah.
But, you know, he lied last night. And, you know, lie is a pretty strong word, but let me give you one example. You know, last night he said correctly that there was never any evidence of a relationship between bin Laden and Saddam. However, he went to Congress, and he knew that in very clearly in the fall of 2002 when the National Intelligence Estimate was completed. Yet he turned around and went to Congress in February of 2003 and testified about these various associations and clearly left the implication that there was a relationship. And
right.
So he was
now
trying to have it both ways. And it's just, you know, that is so intellectually dishonest. If you watched the 60 Minutes piece, you saw how he tried to bully Scott Pelley on when Pelley was asking him about the definition of torture and waterboarding. And Tenet kept saying that it wasn't torture and kept running away from the question. But Tenet then turned and became, you know, quite angry and stern with Pelley. Well, that was the George Tenet who was bullying analysts who came to him and said, "Hey, Curveball is a bad source," but he didn't want to hear that. So
mm-hmm.
The things he didn't want to hear, he became the bully inside. And I know that from officers who told him in the fall of 2002 as well that they had a reliable source that there was no WMD in Iraq, and Tenet ignored it.
Right. So here's Tenet last night.
You said Iraq made no sense to you in that moment. Does it make any sense to you today?
In terms of complicity with 9/11? Absolutely none. It never made any sense. We could never verify that there was any Iraqi authority, direction, and control, complicity with Al-Qaeda for 9/11 or any operational act against America.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now, here's Condoleezza Rice on Fox News saying this is what George Tenet had to say. Now, this is from some time ago.
What the president and I and other administration officials relied on and you simply rely on the Central Intelligence, the Director of Central Intelligence. George Tenet gave that very testimony, that in fact there were ties going on between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein's regime going back for a decade. Indeed, the 9/11 Commission talked about contacts between the two. We know that Zarqawi was running a poisons network in Iraq. We know that Zarqawi ordered the killing of an American diplomat in Jordan from Iraq. There were ties between Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
So who? One of these two is lying, or the two of them have engaged in a criminal conspiracy of some sort that has led to the death of arguably hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the facts are, and I wrote this for a paper that I actually gave to L. Paul Bremer, Jerry Bremer, back in January of 2003, that Iraq had never been involved with any mass casualty terrorist attacks against the United States. The last known association with the terrorist attack against U.S. interests was the failed attempt in 1993 to kill George Bush. Most of the terrorism that Iraq engaged in was directed at Israel and Iran, and then at some of the U.N. officials that were inside Iraq. That said, they were very strict about not dealing with and not cooperating with Islamic extremists, because Saddam was not an Islamic extremist, even though towards just prior to the regime, he suddenly sort of found religion in the sense of wanting to try to use some ties with those folks to help shore him up. But he still didn't lend operational support. And they used the stuff about Zarqawi, who was up in a corner of Iraq that Saddam didn't effectively control. So
it was under our protection, actually. That was a no-fly zone.
So, you know, you got all these things that are just, they can have a factual truth to them, but when you really understand what's being said, it's just misleading.
Yeah. Larry, we're talking with Larry Johnson, former CIA officer and State Department official, noquarter.typepad.com. Larry, we have a little less than a minute left here before we've got to take a break. I'm just wondering how you think this is all going to play out.
Well, this is just, you know, Pink Floyd, another brick in the wall. It is. What George Tenet does is corroborate what Richard Clark said, that very early on the administration was obsessed with going after Saddam and had no intention of taking out Al-Qaeda. They were obsessed with Saddam. And
is this PNAC, or is this oil, or is this political capital, or is it all of the above?
I think it's all of the above. You know, there's not one overarching.
That's my sense of it as well. My sense of it is that George Bush himself wanted to do it for political capital, that Cheney wanted to do it for his oil buddies, and that the ideologues in the administration wanted to do it for the PNAC purposes. Let's create empire.
Right.
And it was a perfect storm. It was the right group got together in the right way at the right time.
And
we're wrong.
American people are paying a terrible price for it today.
Yeah, and people in the Middle East and frankly all over the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Larry Johnson. Yeah, Larry, thanks so much for being with us. Larry Johnson, noquarter.typepad.com. Good talking to you, Larry. 16 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Don't you know? I mean, just ask them. Just ask these guys who brought us this war. We step into a surreal world. We have conservatives saying that they're not conservative. We have Tony Snow saying there's been no attempt to try to link Saddam to 9/11. Tony Snow hit the ground running this morning, as they report over at the Center for American Progress, his blog, thinkprogress.org. In his first interview with CBS's Early Show, Snow declared that the White House never tried to link Iraq and September 11. Never tried to do it. Snow says there has been no attempt to try to link Saddam to September 11. Well, look at the actual resolution authorizing force. This is the so-called authority to go to war that the House and Senate voted for. The majority of Democrats in the House voted against. The majority of Democrats in the Senate voted in favor of, tragically. That resolution presented to the House and Senate by the Bush administration said, quote, whereas members of Al-Qaeda, an organization bearing responsibility for attacks on the United States, its citizens and interests, including the attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001, are known to be in Iraq. I mean, it's right there. George Tenet, in my opinion, also, again, back to Condi Rice. Here he is, and this is the stuff that I'm guessing was sufficiently subtle that it slipped by everybody's radar. I mean, all the emphasis was on, and the emotional emphasis, the dramatic emphasis, the visual emphasis in the 60 Minutes piece was on, we all believe that intelligence was good enough to sell to the American people. Right, but the carry-on message, I think, was basically one that George Bush will be happy with, but maybe not Condi Rice. Because here's George Tenet.
You're telling Condoleezza Rice in that meeting in the White House in July that we should take offensive action in Afghanistan now, before 9/11.
We need to consider immediate action inside Afghanistan now. We need to move to the offensive.
Now, let me just pause this. This is the point where Condi Rice then, day before yesterday, said when this first came out, she said, oh, I don't know what he was talking about. Offensive action in Afghanistan. Well, what he was talking about was assassinating bin Laden. What had been tried three times unsuccessfully by the Clinton administration when George Tenet was head of the CIA in the Clinton administration. That's what he was talking about. And somehow that, you know, never connected for Condi Rice. So he is saying this to Condi Rice, and he continues.
With the president every morning.
Yeah.
Why aren't you telling the president, Mr. President, this is terrifying, we have to do this now, forget about the bureaucracy, I need this authority this afternoon.
Right, because
And this is where Tenet lays the entire thing at Condi Rice's feet.
Because the United States government doesn't work that way. The president is not the action officer. You bring the action to the National Security Advisor and people who set the table for the president to decide on policies they're going to implement.
That would be the National Security Advisor was Condi Rice. But George Tenet, as the head of the, as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, I believe at that point in time, I may be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, George Tenet was a member of the cabinet. Didn't these guys ever get together and say, gee, should we have a war or not? Apparently not. Apparently, as the Secretary of the Treasury laid out, as Jon Snow laid out, from the very beginning, literally from the first day that the Bush administration came into office, they had decided that they were going to go after Saddam Hussein. They were going to go after Iraq. Which brings us back.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment. And fourth is the purge.
Are you seriously talking about contemplating an impeachment of this president?
What I'm saying, there's four ways to influence a president.
And that's one of them?
Impeachment. And
that's an option that is on the table.
I'm just saying that's one way to influence a president.
That's one way to influence a president, impeachment. See, impeachment doesn't mean removal from office. Impeachment means indicted for a crime, specifically a high crime or misdemeanor, or treason. Those are the three things that you can impeach a president for, according to the Constitution. It doesn't specify what those high crimes or misdemeanors might be. That's up to Congress. But the bar has been set fairly low. Apparently lying about having sex in the Oval Office under oath before a grand jury is enough. So what about lying to all of the American people about something that's going to lead to the death of 500,000 to 600,000 human beings? What about something that's going to completely tarnish the image of the United States in the eyes of the rest of the world for generations? What about something that's going to dramatically increase the level of terrorism all around the world? And I'm not just talking about the invasion of Iraq, but also the whole Abu Ghraib, and now we're torturing, and now we've got secret prisons, all of it.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Well, we'll get there one of these days soon. We really, truly will. When you have people like William Odom, retired general, formerly the head of the National Security Agency, the NSA, the spy agency that has probably 10 or more times the budget of the CIA. When you have General William Odom coming out this weekend and saying that George W. Bush is AWOL, well, I mean, and arguing that it's time for Congress to intervene, that we need an intervention. I mean, this is almost like family therapy.
In principle, I do not favor congressional involvement in the execution of U.S. foreign and military policy. I have seen its perverse effects in many cases.
But
the conflict in Iraq is different. Over the past couple of years, the president has let it proceed on automatic pilot, making no corrections in the face of accumulating evidence that his strategy is failing and cannot be rescued. Thus, he lets the United States fly further and further into trouble, squandering its influence, money, and blood, facilitating the gains of our enemies. The Congress is the only mechanism we have to fill this vacuum in command judgment. To put this in a simple Army metaphor, the Commander-in-Chief seems to have gone AWOL, that is, absent without leave.
Wow. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Rich in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I watched Tenet's interview with great interest last night, and there was one point that I just found most exasperating that I know very well. And that is that, you know, he blames Condi for not taking charge of the responsibility. But a lot of people knew what was going on. And more specifically, the FBI knew what was going on because they were tailing these guys through flight schools. And so this excuse that, oh, well, we just, you know, lost the paperwork or something just doesn't wash.
Yeah.
And more to the real point here is that John Ashcroft on July 26th, made a public announcement that he was no longer going to be taking civil aviation because the FBI had told him that there was a general threat assessment to the airlines. Now, what's interesting about this is they said at the time it was not a threat against Ashcroft specifically, but it was a threat against all civil aviation.
Right.
Now, why I harp on this point with people is this. If they had, obviously they knew. The FBI knew, the CIA knew, the executive branch knew, all kinds, the airlines knew, they were given all kinds of warnings.
Condi Rice testified before Congress that she was there when Bush was handed a briefing in Crawford, Texas on August 6th that said Bin Laden determined a strike inside the United States. Right, the presidential daily briefing.
But
I mean, these guys, he had 56 specific warnings about this thing.
The critical point I want to make with this is this. All these agencies, government agencies and industries knew that this attack was coming. Nobody let a peep out to the general public. Now, whether it was for protecting their sources, which of course they trashed plain, but regardless, they were protecting their sources or they're just a very secretive bunch. The reason this is important is we all here in Seattle remember Rasmussen or whatever his name was, the Millennium Bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he was caught was not because there was some big sweep, there was the Patriot Act or something. They caught him because they said, you know what? We think there's a terrorist attack coming down the road. We want you to keep your eyes and ears open. And some right. alert person at a ferry dock saw something unusual and
That's
stopped
right.
him.
And that was oddly enough, Tenet was still running the CIA, but that was under the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And the Clinton administration had a very different view of how you interact with the public, like openly and transparently, unless it has to do with sex in the White House. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim.
Hey, my feeling about the Tenet interview was simple. George Bush has a lot of company and a lot of men in his administration, and they're all company men, and Tenet is just yet another one. What was needed was a whistleblower, and although given, you know, the timing of it and what would be, I mean, superhuman courage would be required of somebody that could whistleblow in this administration, and the closest thing we have to that is Joe Wilson.
Yeah.
And the reason why you needed superhuman courage in this incident is because you knew there would be retribution. And the retribution that was paid by Joe Wilson's wife. No, Joe right. Wilson isn't an angel. He's got his own flaws. But he's the closest thing to courage that we have.
Yeah, well said, Kim. Very well said. Thank you. Ed in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Ed.
Hey, how you doing? You know, the thing that changed me from a lifetime Republican to an instant Democrat was when it came out when the ninth...
I think we just lost Ed. Scott in Utah. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine.
The reason I'm calling is, you know, it's good to impeach. I'm a little nervous. Okay, here we go.
That's quite all right. So here we are. We're back
to
impeachment.
I'm sorry. It's better
go
to
ahead.
Impeach for the wrong reason than not to impeach at all. But as far as Murtha saying that, you know, using the threat of impeachment as a way to influence policy, I mean, he's admitting that there's crimes committed.
Yeah, I think so implicitly. To say that one of the ways that you get a president's attention is by impeachment, not threatening impeachment, but by impeachment, that's pretty cool radical stuff coming from a guy who is sort of the right-hand man of the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. Phil in Los Angeles. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Oh, hi. Also on this impeachment subject, I'd like to get your opinion on the psychology aspect of this, because it seems like the people of the country have never had a stomach for impeaching Bush and Cheney. They've witnessed all the crimes. It couldn't possibly be any worse. I watched the Democratic debate the other night, and Kucinich was up there, and they asked who would support him. Nobody raised their hands.
I think the people of America would support an impeachment effort. I think that there would be no problem with that. The reason why, in my opinion, and you know, I may be wrong in this, but the reason why I believe that Nancy Pelosi said at the very beginning that she was taking impeachment off the table was twofold. Probably the most important part was that she's third in line. And so if Bush and Cheney both get impeached, and any crime that Bush is guilty of, Cheney's at least is guilty of. So if these guys get impeached for a crime, she becomes president. And it would be very unseemly for her to be seen as promoting herself into her next job. So number one, she has to kind of recuse herself, and essentially I think she was doing that. And number two, she had a very specific legislative agenda that she wanted to be sure it got done. And a lot of it actually has gotten done. And so I think strategically, politically, it was very wise at that time.
I
think now the sentiment of the country is changing, and frankly, I think that the sentiment of Congress is changing slowly. And now it's time to bring that topic back and ask about it. And I frankly think that this was a trial balloon.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment, and fourth is
impeachment, a way to influence the mm-hmm. Catherine in Seattle. Hey, Catherine.
Oh, hi, Tom. I just want to make a real fine point about what Tenet said about the slam dunk comment.
Mm-hmm.
He was the head of the CIA, so he's going to give us information on the quality of the information for foreign policy reasons. He's not the national propaganda minister. That's not a question he would have been asked.
But it is the question he was asked. I mean, he made it very clear that the whole point of this meeting, and you go back to the Downing Street minutes, by the way, in the Downing Street memo, that was a large part of that was about a meeting between Tenet and the, and what was his name? I want to say Strangelove. It was something Love. The guy was the head of British intelligence. And, you know, basically saying that we're going to fix the intelligence to meet the policy. In other words, we're going to fix it. We're going to sell this thing because we've already decided we're going to go to war. And that's what Tenet said last night, was that they had a marketing meeting, not a policy meeting.
So he's saying that he was never involved in giving the fundamental quality of the information, only what it could, how it could be used against the American people.
That's right. That's right. Essentially what he said last night, and he was ambiguous about
incompetence.
Yeah. Well, not only that, what he was saying was that the Bush administration didn't ask him to do his job as director of Central Intelligence, telling them whether or not there was a threat. They asked him instead to be part of a PR machine to sell a war that satisfied the PNAC people who had this political ideology about we've got to become worldwide empire, to satisfy Cheney and all his buddies in the oil industry who wanted to become multi-billionaires, and to satisfy George W. Bush, who thought that he would avenge the death of his, or the attempted assassination of his father. And to satisfy Karl Rove, who was convinced that attacking Iraq would provide enormous political capital that would help get Republicans elected in the 2002 election, and it did, by the way, and that political capital could then be used to create a hundred year majority, not unlike Hitler's thousand years, literally a 100-year Republican majority. That's what Karl Rove has talked about. David in Seattle, a little less than a minute before we got to take a break, David.
No problem.
What's up?
Yeah, with all the comments made between these neo cannibals, Rice and Tenet, this segues nicely with the subpoena being issued to Rice by Henry Waxman's committee for another public flogging, this time in front of his committee, and the questions that she still needs to answer. As far as the pre-war intelligence, the Nigerian uranium claims that Iraq was trying to acquire nuclear material, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It should remind us that Rice has said that she's going to defy this subpoena, and frankly, you know, she should be brought up for contempt of Congress charges if that's what happens. If she actually does defy the subpoena. This is really serious stuff. I mean, people are dying. Today, right now as we speak, people are dying as a consequence of these policies that were sold to us on lies. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Like the water from our sink, they say it's not safe to drink. You gotta go and buy it at the store. Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone. Look what's washing on the beach. And Lord, I believe from the heavens to the sea, we're bringing Mother Nature to her knees. Let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to follow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Tony Snow this morning on Good Morning America, confronted with George Tenet saying there was never a link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, who attacked us on 9/11. Tony Snow's response.
Well, there it is from the former CIA chief. Is he right, Tony? Is it time for the administration to come clean?
Well, wait a minute, Chris. The president's been saying exactly that all along, so I don't know what the headline is. As a matter of fact, I can remember right after September 11th, sitting here when I was a journalist, and some of your colleagues, I believe Charlie Gibbs had been there at the time as well, The fact is the president made it clear before the State of the Union in 2002 that there was no link between Saddam Hussein and September 11th. So,
okay, before the State of the Union in 2002. So let's look at his speech in Cincinnati in October of 2002 before the State of the Union and hear exactly what George W. Bush said. Here he is.
We know that Iraq and the Al-Qaeda terrorist network share a common enemy, the United States of America. We know that Iraq and Al-Qaeda have had high-level contacts that go back a decade.
Ellen Ryder with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. Ellen, make some sense out of this for me.
Well, it's hard to make some sense. What's interesting is that, of course, this is George Tenet's view of things, and the White House is publicly sort of supporting him but questioning some of what he says. And then behind the scenes, in fact, they told one of the U.S. News and World Reporters that Tenet was an whiny, ungrateful, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to say the last word, but it begins with a B. And so clearly the White House is very damaged, I think, by the Tenet book. However you and I have to think of Tenet, it certainly has exacted its damage.
Interesting. And, you know, it sure seems to me that in all probability the person who handed this off to Bob Woodward was Dick Cheney. Is there any other, you know, possibly Stephen Hadley, but the only people in the room were Cheney, Hadley, Rice, Bush, and Tenet.
That's right. And actually what I'm suggesting to people who really are very, who have a lot of time on their hands is to actually take Hadley's book and take Woodward's book and put them side by side and make a timeline. And it'll be very interesting with their various quotes to actually get a sense of what really happened. I think between the two books, you have a very good sense of what really went on.
Which raises the question, if Bob Woodward is really a journalist and not a Washington, D.C. suck-up who plays a journalist on TV. If he really is a journalist, why isn't he out reporting on this story that he is a part of? Why is he not reporting, for example, what his source was? Or, you know, if he wants to protect his source, at least, you know, contributing to our understanding of how it is that this happened. Because his statement that he told so dramatically on 60 Minutes, where he's, you know, he acted it out of the president doing, or of Tenet doing the slam dunk thing. His statement has so burned itself into the consciousness of Americans that you know, there has been this assumption that we should all give Bush a pass, because obviously his guy George Tenet told him that, you know, the intelligence is a slam dunk, and now Tenet's denying this. I mean, shouldn't Woodward be stepping forward?
And, you know, I mean, no, I think, well, I am not a big Woodward fan, although I have to say I thought he somewhat redeemed himself in the last book. Not totally, but at least partially. But what's so interesting is the six former CIA agents who are saying, turn over all that money from the book.
Yeah, we had Larry Johnson on the first hour in the 40 minutes ago. Larry was on the program speaking to
that letter. Okay, so you don't need to hear it from me. But essentially, I mean, there's a lot of pushback on Tenet because if he really believes what he's written, if he believes his own press releases, why the heck didn't he resign?
Right. And now Tenet, in two different places in this interview, very explicitly laid the blame for all of this on Condi Rice. Is she going to be held to account by the Bush administration?
Have you ever known the Bush administration hold anybody in account, including Mr. Wolfowitz, who the other day at the malaria event in the Rose Garden supported Wolfowitz, and now today he's meeting with the Executive Committee of the World Bank, where he's in heap big trouble. This administration, the big problem of George Bush with an MBA from Harvard, never holds his staff accountable.
So there won't be any accountability here. What else is going on in Washington, D.C., by the way?
Well, the Supremes had both good news and bad news. I'll start out with the good news. They left intact a lower D.C. appellate court decision that the EPA regulations were so lenient on coal-fired plants that they violated the Clean Air Act. So that was a plus for the environment. Not a plus, they did not hear a case of two Guantanamo detainees, one who was supposedly Bin Laden's driver, and the other was a guy, this Kadar guy who used a grenade, allegedly used a grenade to kill a U.S. soldier. They wanted to have their cases heard, and the Supreme Court has not allowed that. They turned that down today. They are going to hear a case of a Mexican national that was denied the legal help of his country and attorneys, which really defies the Vienna Convention, and they will hear that. And I guess there's something like 60 Mexican nationals, either on death row or for very serious crimes, that were not allowed counsel. So they are going to hear that. And another not great decision, 8-1, the police are not required to call off a pursuit if other people, a car chase, if other people may be endangered by this chase.
That's got to be a tough one, actually, I think.
That is a tough one, but interesting. Also, hate crimes this week, and the Republicans are fighting against it.
Yeah, of course. The party of bigotry and family values. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, Jerome Gillette has a fascinating story to tell you about socialist health care.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Visualize that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
So last week I was browsing through the Daily Kos, as I am wont to do from time to time, and came across a posting which was actually picked up off Jerome G.A.'s website, Eurotrib.com, in which also was contributed to the Daily Kos, from his diary, in which he talked about an experience, quote, my family's dealings with a socialist, centralized, single-payer health care system. This is fascinating. I'd like to have a conversation with this guy. So, Jerome G.A., welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's a hard name to pronounce in English, but you did well.
Do you want to say it so I can do it a little better?
My name is Jerome Guillet.
Yeah.
And I write on Daily Kos actually as Jerome à Paris. So that's
Okay. Now, one of the things I thought was fascinating, you said I was happy to pay taxes before, but I'm really, really happy to pay taxes now to provide the level of care that I really need. You talk about your experience with a sick child in a socialist, centralized, single-payer healthcare system. In short form, tell us the story.
Well, our case is obviously a pretty extreme one, as my son, who's now 6.5 years old, was diagnosed 2.5 years ago with a brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's gone through the whole gamut surgery, a very, very difficult surgery on his brain, then chemotherapy, and more recently radiotherapy, as the tumor was still there. And the main point, I mean, I read the experiences I see on Daily Kos and other places of people that struggle to pay for health care, to get treatment, and at least I didn't have to worry about this. I mean, worrying about a sick child is hard enough if you have to worry about the money. In this case, we didn't have to worry about anything. We were taken care of from the start. As soon as he was diagnosed, he was brought to hospital. Surgery took place a few days later. Chemo was put in place a couple of weeks later. Full re-education was put in place for him and went on for a year and a half. Radiotherapy, when it was needed, took place. It's one of only three places in the world that do it. It's in Paris. The other are in Boston and Switzerland. So it's not cheap care. It was top-notch care for a very difficult sickness and very, very bad situation. And the system did all it could to take care of my son. We had excellent doctors. They're still taking care of him. And hopefully we'll get results. But the thing is, we never had to pay anything. We filled in one form at the very beginning, basically giving our names and social security numbers, and that was it. Everything is 100% covered from the start when you have a life-threatening disease.
For in the French single payer
in the French system.
Yeah.
For normal things, when you have a flu or you break a leg, normal social security will not cover everything. You have co-payments, or you have a part that you have to pay yourself, and the rest is covered by social security. But whenever a certain threshold is covered, then you become fully covered. So you have really full insurance for catastrophic events or costly events in any case. And that's for everybody. I mean, it's not linked to my job. It's not linked to my to anything else. It's provided to every single person in France.
Yeah. Jérôme Gier, who's blogging over at Eurotrib.com and also on the Daily Kos, dailykos.com. Jérôme, I lived in Germany for a year and had a we didn't have a catastrophic illness, but we used the German healthcare system, and the experience was very simple. You know, once you have the equivalent of a social security number, you just give them the number and you show up and they take care of you, and that's it. Occasionally there's a small copay that, you know, maybe the equivalent of $5 or $10, and you know, end of discussion. This is pretty much this is the norm across all of Europe, is it not? At least all that we would refer to as Western Europe.
Yeah, and actually you have the choice. I mean, you can, for normal care, you can either go to the doctors that charge you the official price of Social Security, or you can go to a doctor that charges whatever he cares to, i.e. a lot more. You'll be reimbursed the same amount as if you went to the normal system, i.e. the official tariff, and you'll pay the difference. So if you want to go to see a fancy doctor, you can do it, and you just pay it yourself, or you get private insurance to cover the difference. But everybody has the right to be covered and go see the doctors and buy drugs and all other services covered by the system. And
is the healthcare system in France under attack by conservatives in France the way that the Canadian healthcare system is under attack by conservatives in Canada, who basically want to privatize the entire thing and then get into the health insurance business and start making billions?
Not so much. Well, the insurance companies are nibbling a bit because, as I said, there's this system. There's a part that's covered by Social Security, and then you can get a top-up via these private insurances. So the fight has been that the private sector is pushing for the part covered by the public system to be smaller so that they can get a bigger chunk of the coverage provided by them. So there is a little bit of a fight, but there's no political fight to reduce the fact that the system should be accessible to all, that it should be public, and that catastrophic care should be provided by the public system.
Jérôme, the vote that is coming up here, we have essentially a socialist candidate and a conservative candidate who are going head-to-head in France for the prime minister position. What is healthcare a part of this debate that's going on, and how does this highlight is the position president or prime minister? Forgive my
ignorance. It's for president.
For president of French politics.
Healthcare is not really a topic this time. I mean, it does pop up. The system does have problems. Sometimes there's a deficit, so you need to refund this, and the doctors want to be paid a little bit more. So you have the normal tug of war and nibbling at the system, and sometimes it's worse, some years it's worse than others. You have a bigger deficit, so it becomes a political issue. But it's about who pays and how it's run, because the system is run as a mutualist system. It's both employers and employees that pay contributions, and it's managed jointly. So sometimes they say, who's going to pay more? Is it the employers, the companies, or is it the wage earners that are going to pay more? So you have these kinds of fights. But it's not about how the system works. It's about at the margin how it's funded, and do you get to repay 70% or 65%?
Right. So there's a broad social consensus that this is a good and healthy thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Jérôme, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Jérôme Gier, and also your website, eurotrib.com, and we send our very best wishes to you and your family and your son.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. 14 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And a caller in Pittsburgh. Somehow I've lost your name there. I'm sorry. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello?
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 Yes, you're on the air.
I'm calling about the Social Security medical benefits thing that GW proposed. I am myself I am a senior, and I can tell you it is terrible. It doesn't work at all for the common man.
John, you're talking about how the GOP is basically filibustering changes to the Medicare system that would allow the government to negotiate for prescription drugs. Is that what you're talking about?
Not only that, I am referring to an article in today's Wall Street Journal, in the front page. Mm-hmm. And what they're talking about is they have, this is the insurance industry, they have got some former Democrat senators to become their lobbyists. And the name, the guy's name is, let me get his name, it's Lewis Stokes, a former Democratic representative from Ohio. Now, I don't know these guys, but we must all call our senators. And in fact, people from Ohio should better call this Mr. Lewis Stokes and ask him what the hell he thinks he's doing, because it doesn't work at all.
The entire program. Let's just privatize it all. You know, we don't need any government involvement in health care. Good on you, John. Thanks for the call. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Hey, I want to call out a congratulations to the California Democratic Party. The party itself has just adopted a resolution calling for the full investigation into abuses of power by President George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney. Whereas George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney have acted in a manner contrary to their trust as president and vice president, subversive of the Constitution, to the great prejudice of the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of California and the United States of America by intentionally disseminating and propagating knowingly false and fabricated, quote, evidence, end quote, regarding the threat from Iraq in order to wage a tragic, bloody war with the loss of thousands of brave American troops and Iraqi civilians. And whereas it is clear that since September 11, 2001, George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney have abused their powers of office by, one, using information they knew to be false as justification for the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Two, condoning and authorizing the torture of prisoners of war. Three, authorizing wiretaps on U.S. citizens without obtaining warrants. Four, disclosing the name of an undercover CIA operative contrary to law in order to harm her or for her husband's opposition to the Iraq war. Five, having suspended and denied the historic writ of habeas corpus by ordering the indefinite detention of so-called enemy combatants without charge, without access to legal counsel. And six, overstepping presidential authority by signing statements used to ignore or circumvent portions of over 750 congressional statutes he brought into law. Therefore, be it resolved that the California Democratic Party supports vigorous investigation of these charges by the Congress of the United States, including the full use of congressional subpoena power authority to completely disclose the actions of the administration to the American people and to take necessary action to call the administration to account.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment. And fourth is the purse.
Are you seriously talking about contemplating an impeachment of this president?
What I'm saying, there's four ways to influence a president.
And that's one of them?
Is impeachment. And
that's an option that is on the table.
I'm just saying that's one way to influence a president.
I'm just saying. Well, you know, if Bush has to serve his debt to society and Cheney, maybe they can, for $82 a day, get a 5-star jail cell. This is pretty amazing. In California, Dateline, Santa Ana, California, article in the New York Times by Jennifer Steinhauer. Anyone convicted of a crime knows a debt to society often must be paid in jail, but a slice of Californians willing to supplement that debt with cash, no personal checks, please, are finding that the time can be almost bearable. For offenders whose crimes are usually relatively minor, carjackers should not bother, and whose bank accounts remain lofty, a dozen or so city jails across the state offer pay-to-stay upgrades. Theirs are a clean, quiet, if not exactly remarché alternative, or did I mispronounce that? I'm sure I did, to the standard county jails, where the walls are bars, the fellow inmates are hardened, and the privileges are few. Well, as the Washington, D.C. madam is outing folks, Randall Tobias, former director of the United States AID service, USAID, who was overseeing a program to persuade people let me phrase this right. Brazil, for example, lost $40 million, quote, for one of its most successful anti-AIDS strategies, persuading sex workers to use condoms and other measures to stop spreading the disease, end quote. Because this guy, on behalf of the Bush administration, is saying, now, wait a minute, if it's got to do with condoms, you can't have any funding. Instead, they were trying to put together highly successful relationship programs aimed at men and boys to help them develop healthy relationships with women. So this guy is patronizing the alleged Washington, D.C. madam, Pamela Martin and Associates. And apparently also, this is from the Washington Post, Sibley, her attorney, also filed notice that he intends to depose political consultant Dick Morris in a separate civil proceeding. Morris would not comment. Dick Morris, the only guy who has ever actually hung up on me. I'd be concerned as all the time.
Look out for Osama bin Laden. He's coming to get you. You need to be paying attention to this. This has to be your number one priority. And she said, okay, thank you very much for that information. And then did nothing.
Did he check the document out of his socks when he told you that?
Come on, Dick. Do you want me to talk about hookers with you? I mean, you know, come on, Dick.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the interview. Bye-bye.
That was Dick Morris hanging up on me when I pointed out that I was trying to talk about Sandy Berger and Condi Rice, and he's going to, oh, yeah, let's talk about, maybe let's do personal attacks. And so I said, what about hookers? Maybe a little prescient. That was from November 3rd of 05. That was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So should we take up a collection for Dick Morris so he can get a better jail cell? Or for Mr. Tobias? Or for Cheney and Bush? You know, I'd probably kick in a little for Tobias and Dick Morris. I mean, these are kind of human frailty crimes. But leading a country to war? I don't think so. Maybe that's where we could have the exception. No, seriously. Do you think people ought to be able to upgrade to a better jail cell? 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof. Won't
paper a trick. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
Times are getting tough here in the United States of America. 26 years of insane conservative economics. 34 minutes past the hour. 1-866-303-2270. Our phone number, TomHartmann.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room and say hello. Scott in Huntington Beach, California. You're listening on K-Talk. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. This is kind of exciting. As I told your the guy, the lady that answered the phone, I was at the Democratic State Convention this weekend down in San Diego.
Now, this is where this resolution that I just read was adopted.
Oh, yeah. It was just, I mean, besides the fact that we had all the presidential candidates come and address us, which was pretty exciting, the amount of work that goes into these resolutions is incredible, and the leadership it takes to keep to get all those statements and to take it to the floor to get a to take a vote and get it to be a resolution was very interesting.
This read to me like an article of impeachment.
Well, what was interesting was that there were several factions. Most people were in favor of impeachment. I would have to say all the delegates. Impeachment was on the table, but the differences was more procedural. You know, the emotional people just say let's impeach, not realizing that you've got to have a reason to impeach. And the more calmer people were saying, no, we have to have the investigation, and let's not make it a political procedure. Let's make it a legal procedure.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you've said from time to time on your show.
Yeah. Very interesting. Scott, thanks for the heads up and for the report from the convention. Rosalind in Huntington Beach, California, you were also at the convention.
Yeah, in fact, that's a big shout-out to Scott because he's my fellow delegate from the same assembly district here. And 100% what Scott said, if there were two things that overwhelmingly stood out at that convention was everybody was solidly out of Iraq, and right now, not in a year, not in 6 months, but now, and the impeachment. Those were the overwhelming themes all 3 days down there.
Yeah, it's interesting. And when you hear Jack Murtha, arguably historically one of the most conservative members of the Democratic Party, on national television with Bob Schieffer.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment.
Impeachment from Jack Murtha's lips. Maybe to God's ear. Go ahead.
I think that was one of the messages. Of course, Nancy Pelosi is, a goddess out here. But I think that was one of the messages she took home with her because you couldn't avoid not hearing that.
Good. Well, thank you, Rosalind, for the info and the heads up, and I'm really pleased to hear that the Democratic Party is figuring this thing out. Paula in Louisiana. Hey, Paula, you wanted to comment on our caller on our conversation with Mr. Gillet in France about the French healthcare system.
Yes. I just want to let you know that as a retiree, I did retirement before I was 65, and I checked into individual insurance, and as a diabetic with a fairly reasonable deductible, the cost is almost $2,000 a month.
Wow.
For
health
insurance.
$2,000 a month. So this is so what is wrong with this country, and it is so totally consistent with the conservative worldview that, hey, you're on your own and some company can make money off you. That's just great. And I think it's just tragic that they are suggesting that. Paula, thank you for sharing your story with us. As grim as it is, God forbid, we must make this country bring us into line with the other 36 industrialized countries in the world and say, let's be humane here. Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing? You know, there's a couple things I want to say. The first thing is I'd be a little bit concerned about Cheney in jail, and I wouldn't mind donating a little bit extra money so he can have a microwave oven or something.
But, I'm a pacemaker joke, right?
It's a little bit of a joke, yeah. But I really wouldn't mind him having one. The main reason I called, really, is because these guys have been in the administration and several administrations throughout the years. Rummy and Cheney were in as far back as the Nixon administration. They keep on coming back and biting us in the butt. Now, and the Raw story this morning, they had the article about Cheney helping the proliferation of nuclear arms and F-16s with nuclear capabilities. And it just keeps on happening, and we keep on this, not even slapping them on the wrist. Something needs to be done. We need to send a message so these people that keep on coming back into the government won't come back, because we need to, if we send a message that they're going to jail, or if they've done treasonous offenses that during a time of war that they should be shot.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I wouldn't advocate shooting them, but I do think that if you're trying to send a message. As Jack Murtha said, there are ways to send a message to the president.
The public has spoken. There's four ways to influence a president. And one is popular opinion, the election. Third is impeachment. And fourth is the purge.
Are you seriously talking about contemplating an impeachment of this president?
Bob, what I'm saying, there's four ways to influence a president.
And that's one of them?
Is impeachment. And
that's an option that is on the table.
I'm just saying that's one way to influence a president.
Yeah, well, he needs to be influenced. Lee, or is it Leah in Tampa,
Leah.
Florida? Leah. Hey, Leah. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm calling because I lived through the Watergate investigations and all the hearings, and I watched them all on TV. And I remember when I watched them. I remember when Spiro Agnew had to resign because he was crooked, and I remember Haldeman and Ehrlichman and all those people getting out. Mm-hmm. And when the hearings got really, really heated was 2 years before 1974, which is when the election would have, you know, a new president would have been coming in. Mm-hmm. The election was going to be in 1976, but right. The hearings were going on in 1972. And everyone acts like if you do things, you know, just before any kind of election that it's going to, you know, just ruin everything. But it didn't ruin anything for anybody except for Nixon, because
right.
he was guilty.
Right.
And
well,
I don't understand why people are so afraid, people being the Congress of the United States, so afraid to do a really good investigation like the California delegation wants them to. Of abuse of power, because there has been abuse of power, and there's no problem doing it right now. It wouldn't hurt a thing. There's no use putting it off. I agree with the guy that just called, except that microwaves don't hurt pacemakers.
Oh, okay. Leah, thanks a lot for the call. Oh, my. Number one, using information they knew to be false as justification for the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Number two, condoning and authorizing the torture of prisoners of war. Number three, authorizing wiretaps on U.S. citizens without obtaining a warrant. Number four, disclosing the name of an undercover CIA operative contrary to law in order to harm her for her husband's opposition to the Iraq war. Number five, having suspended and denied the historic writ of habeas corpus by ordering the indefinite detention and so-called enemy combatants without charge or without access to legal counsel. And six, overstepping presidential authority by signing statements used to ignore or circumvent portions of over 750 congressional statutes he brought into law. Calling this resolution from the California Democratic Party adopted yesterday, calling for full investigation into abuses of power by President George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Good on you. California Democratic Party. Bernie, driving in Florida. Hey, Bernie, what's on your mind today? Bernie's not there. Let's go to Mike in Detroit. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to have people in Washington that can't or won't listen, namely the president. I'm a former Marine from 30 years ago, and we had a way to handle troops that couldn't get in line when we were in the Marine Corps. We held what they called a blanket party. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you.
I am, and it's not something that you'd want done to frankly, anybody, I would say.
Well, it would. It might give us a little bit of satisfaction, though, if Congress could do that.
Well, let's talk about legally doing it. I mean, rather than essentially torturing or killing somebody, let's talk about legal process here. But you know, Mike, your point that people need to be held accountable is I think a useful one. Paul in Turner's Fall, Massachusetts. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. I'm just.
Or Paul, I'm sorry.
It's hey, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to go to a break here in just a second. So.
Okay. Quick comment. One is the talk about fascist government. Really, one way that I'm reframing it is that the government now has become basically mercenary to the corporate control of the country. And I wanted to reframe an old rallying cry, which would be no corporation or no incorporation without representation.
Well,
I think that we
one.
Have to get the corporations back under the control of the people.
You're absolutely right, Paul. Good on you. Well said. Absolutely right. And the first step to that is to end corporate personhood, to do away with the idea that a corporation has access to the Bill of Rights. They didn't at the founding of this country. They didn't through the Civil War. They didn't until late in the 19th century, and they shouldn't now. Very simple. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tall trees, white snow, will they be here when I go? I look up, I look down, pollution in the air, pollution on the ground. I look left, I look right, there's no relief in sight. Time has come to make a plan. Time has come. Take a stand. Time has come.
Indeed, it's the time for all of us. Just like the California Democratic Party, they took a stand. God bless them. By the way, join me in Dubrovnik, Croatia. Talking about transforming the world. This culture is called transforming, or this conference is called Transforming Culture from Empire to Global Community, June 3rd through the 9th. Next month. Well, a month and a couple of days. Brian Eisler, Tom Hayden, George Lakoff, David Corton, Francis Morlapace, Swami Beyondananda, me, a bunch of other folks, going to be in Dubrovnik, Croatia. You can learn all about the Praxis Peace Conference over at Praxis Peace, P-R-A-X-I-S, Peace, P-E-A-C-E, .org, the Praxis Peace Conference. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a hoot. Steve in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking the call. You know, I was thinking about just how bad our image has gone around the world, how bad it's gone downhill, you know, as far as attacking Iraq and other decisions. And I was thinking about how we can restore that. And one of the best ways we can restore that, it seems to me, would be to impeach the president.
My point exactly, that holding Bush accountable for the things that he's already bragged about, for example,
right.
Wiretapping thousands of Americans illegally in defiance of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I mean, he has literally bragged about this. The Karl Rove strategy of take your weakness and inflate it, take the other person's strength and diminish it. I mean, this they literally have bragged about breaking the law. And
exactly.
there has to be a point where you say enough already.
We're not going to tolerate this anymore.
We
need to show the world that our Constitution works and that we're not going to put up with this crap.
Yep. Yeah. Well said. More or less. BJ in Arizona. Hey, BJ.
Hi, Tom. It was a great pleasure to meet you in Phoenix. I have a problem with what about Congress's complicity in all of these abuses of power by passing Patriot Act, MCA, the Defense Authorization Act?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say Congress. I would say the Republicans in Congress, because many of those acts were passed by very, very slim majorities that included a few Democrats, but were in some cases 95, 96, 98, 99, 100% Republican Number one. Number two, I do share your concern about that, and I think it's really important that we lean on our elected officials and say, hey, listen, the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act that does away with habeas corpus and ends posse comitatus, it's time to change these things, and we want them changed immediately. And you can call your member of Congress at 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. Brody in Wildwood, Florida. Hey, Brody.
Hey, Tom. Wanted to ask you, is there a way for Congress or, Congress to stop the troops right now from shooting these innocent Iraqis in light of what we know now about Halliburton and all these people and their way they gained the intelligence to start this war? Couldn't they stop them right now?
You mean because of what George Tenet said last night on CBS?
No.
Okay. I'm missing something here. Your question then is it possible for bottom line here, the way that Congress can stop the activities in Iraq, the ongoing occupation of Iraq. I was on Fox News Sunday morning, by the way, debating a conservative talk show host about this. The way that Congress can stop the ongoing occupation of Iraq by the United States and facilitate bringing other countries in the region into a process that will bring about peace in that region is by saying to Bush when he vetoes this bill, which is going to land on his desk in all probability tomorrow, is by saying to Bush, okay, fine. You don't want the bill? You don't want the money? Cool. That's great. We're going to go about the next few months putting together a national health care system. You have enough funding. The Pentagon has enough money in its budget to keep these, to redeploy everybody who's in Iraq, to pull them out safely between now and the end of August, and facilitate some sort of a peace process, bring people in. I mean, the money is there to do it. It's very simple. Kate in Portland, Maine. Hey, Kate, listening on 810 The Voice. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I just wanted to say I was at an impeachment event on Saturday here in Portland, and it was really great. It was great to see all those people there doing that. And one of the main messages that came out of that for me was that the power to pressure public officials to take up this cause of impeachment rests in our hands. And you're always saying, you know, get active, which mm-hmm. I love about you. And so I just wanted to say that there were events in over 30 states, impeachment
yes.
day events, and
yes.
people can get involved in that. Go to afterdowningstreet.org.
There you go. Well said, Kate. Thanks. Okay. Thanks a lot for the shout out and for it's absolutely right. H28.org was the thing for yesterday or for this for Saturday, and a lot of people showed up. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Tom. You know, the British punk band of the 80s, Gang of Four, had a great song saying it's not made by great men, meaning history is not made by great men. When Tenet said last night that these are not men of honor, I think that was the takeaway message from everything that he said. He clearly lied. Detainees have died during interrogations in Afghanistan and Abu Ghraib. It's hardly exculpatory for him to say that he meant slam dunk, not to mean evidence for WMD, but only for the attempt to deceive our elected officials and the public. He felt he had to say he didn't torture. You know, he protested too much. He said that five times. And finally, regarding the 16 words, his contention that he didn't read the State of the Union speech and that his executive assistant didn't catch that phrase, that doesn't pass the laugh test.
Yeah, well said, Charlie. It also raises the question, if twice in the past he had said to Bush, take that out of your speech, how is it that Bush left it in the speech? Coming up tomorrow, hang on as I'll be disagreeing with conservative Bernard Goldberg, who's claiming crazies to the left of me, wimps to the right. I'll be telling him he has it backwards. Tom Hartman here with you. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.